All right. So they're getting hopefully my PowerPoint up here at some point. Just a recap on last week. Oh, there it is. They already had it up. Good job. Recapping on last week, we talked about steps 3, 4, 5, and 6. I'm not going to go over those again, but they are up on the screen if you need them. We talked about the importance of having that fully funded emergency fund as a cushion, and how emergencies are going to happen. It's not a matter of if they're going to happen, but when they're going to happen. So we talked about how important that is to build in that cushion. We talked about the importance of saving. I gave you guys some discouraging charts if you're older, some encouraging charts if you're younger on the power of compound interest and how quickly that can turn into something, and how important it is to consistently invest. We talked about different types of investments. We talked about baby step 6, which was paying off your house early and the value in that. And I reminded you guys that your budgets for April, if you were going to do them, April started a couple days ago, so hopefully you guys got those done. If not, you can still do it if you want to. But the month has begun, so hopefully you guys got those done. Hopefully it was somewhat helpful for you, the things that we've talked about leading up to getting your budget done. Hopefully it was not super complicated if you did work on it, especially if you're married. Hopefully it wasn't difficult to go back and forth with your spouse and figure out, get an agreement on how to spend the money and all of those things. So anyways, hopefully it was a mostly positive experience. Maybe you learned some stuff about the way that you've been spending money in the past, or maybe you learned some stuff about how you're going to spend the money in the future, or maybe you realize you have more money than you thought. Hopefully you didn't realize you have less money than you thought, but hopefully it was a helpful exercise and something you can maybe consistently do on a monthly basis. So tonight we're going to get into baby step 7, talking about building wealth and give. So again, these steps go in order. So, depending on where you are, baby step 7 may be a long ways away for you. Maybe you're already in baby step 7. I don't know where everybody's at, but this gives us kind of a final like step or something to look forward to, at least for me. I get excited about thinking about getting to the point where I don't have a mortgage payment anymore. If you have a mortgage payment, think about like how awesome that would be to not have a mortgage payment or a rent payment, whatever it is that you have. So hopefully it's an encouraging thing for you, even if it may be multiple years down the road, depending on where you are. Dave Ramsey, he does these studies and surveys of people who are doing the baby steps, and I don't know exactly where he gets all of the statistics that he uses, but he gives some statistics about how long it takes people to go through this process. And so on average, like baby step 1 is usually, within a month or a couple months of really being intentional and being on the plan or being all in, people usually can get that $1,000 relatively quickly. Baby step 2, obviously that's going to vary a lot depending on how much debt you have, what your income is, what kinds of debt it is. If you have a big expensive car that you can sell that lowers your debt really quickly, obviously that'll help you get out faster, those kinds of things. But on average, it takes anywhere from 18 to 24 months to get through baby step 2. That's an average. And then baby step 3, building up 3 to 6 months. If you're going to err on the lower side, that 3 months, you maybe could get that done in 6 to 8 months of time. If you're going longer, more like the 6 month time period, that may be more like a year or a little over that. Again, those are your monthly expenses, not 3 to 6 months of your income. So, if you make $5,000 a month, but your necessities really is only $3,000 a month, you would base your 3 to 6 months on that $3,000, the necessities, what it would take for you to exist, if you were to lose your income or something severe happened, a big emergency came up, that kind of a thing. And so that takes anywhere from, 6 months to a year, depending on which side of that spectrum you're erring on. And then baby step, obviously 4 and 5, you do at the same time. You're investing 15% of your income into retirement. That's a click of a button. Obviously it hurts your budget a little bit to you lose that income in your paycheck. But that one you can just do right away. Saving for kids' college, we talked about how there's just so much variance in like what that even looks like. So that one you once you set that, you kind of can let that one go. And then baby step 6, though, paying off your mortgage, on average, people who are following his baby steps is anywhere from 8 to 10 years. So most people do a 30-year mortgage. There's all kinds of stuff online. You can see, if you make an extra payment per year, you pay it off in 22 years instead of 30 years. If you do a 15-year mortgage and you throw a little bit extra at it, you can get it paid off a little faster. So on average, 8 to 10 years of people that are being intentional and doing the things. So overall, if you were to start, if you started today and you didn't have any money in savings, you had a bunch of debt, you had a mortgage, all of these things, anywhere from 10 to 12 years is the average that it would take someone to go from baby step 1 all the way to baby step 7. And, of course, there's a lot of variables. I mean, 8 to 10 to 12 years, a lot of life happens. You know, depends on if you have kids or you don't have kids or, you know, one of you's working or both of you's working. There's a lot of variables there. But just to think about, you could go from literally having nothing, being completely paycheck to paycheck with no savings account, and then 10 to 12 years later having a paid-for house and having money set aside in a savings account and having your retirement, beginning to be funded. That's just a cool idea or a cool place to kind of aspire to get to. And again, there's nothing magical about being out of debt completely. There's nothing magical about paying your house off. But there is just some peace that comes with that. You know, Dave's whole thing is financial peace and just having peace and knowing that you can be free to do whatever it is that that God would have you to do. I talked about when we were talking about baby step 2, like how debt can limit the ways that God can use you, and how that can be, how you can not be able to be used completely by God if you're being weighed down and tied down by debt, and how being free from that gives you freedom to pursue a different job or to do something, maybe stay home with your kids or whatever. It gives you freedom to do those things, but it also allows you to be used by God in a different way. So that's just for baby step 2. Think about what it would be like to not have a mortgage payment at all, and the ways that God could use you, and the freedom that would give you to, we're going to have our vision conference starting on Sunday. We're going to have missionaries from all over the place, but and a church planner that's from Georgia that's planting a church in Oregon. And if you think about how God would want to use somebody like that, or could call somebody like that, if you don't have your finances in order, it would be very difficult to be able to be used in that way. And so giving yourself the freedom to be used by God in the ways that God would want you to be used is really kind of the key for all of this, or the reason why we would do any of these things. And so I personally have never had a completely paid for home. I've not made it to baby step 7. Except maybe for a short period of time while we were renting. We didn't have a mortgage and we were debt free at that time. So for a short period of time, I guess I was on baby step 7, but we didn't own a house. So I won't fully claim that. But I can't speak from experience on what it is like to have a paid off, home. I aspire to do that. I'm working towards that. There's a couple of reasons, that I think, at least for me, that are big reasons for that. So one of the things is my wife and I like to travel. We've been a lot of different places. We don't, take super extravagant vacations all the time, but we do get to travel some, and we really do enjoy that. And so I would like to, the older I get and when I get to be at retirement age, or, when I have grandkids, be able to take them on trips and do things. So having some flexibility in my older years or my retirement years to be able to do some of those things, that's one reason that I aspire to do that. The other thing is being able to give. And so I told you guys at the beginning that this is being taught at a church. So, giving obviously is a component of what we do. And I've talked to you about that through the budget on how we do our tithing and all of those things. But I'm not really talking about necessarily about being able to tithe on it. There's just a lot of cool things you can do when you can give money towards something. Now, whether that be towards the church here, towards, like I said, we're going to have our vision conference. There's going to be some stuff that these missionaries or church planters get up and they're going to share about what they're doing in whatever country they're in or whatever city they're planting a church in. And, inevitably we're going to feel like connected to something that someone says, and we're going to be like, man, I wish I could take a trip there with them. I wish I could give them money to support what's going on there. I wish I could, help them in some way. I wish I could send some Bibles to them or whatever. Like we're all going to probably, if you're here for the conference, you're going to, at some point during the conference, you're going to feel a connection to one of these missionaries and their mission field. And you're going to want to help them in some way. So for some of them, our church does support them already, so you can just, give directly to that missionary. But maybe it's more than that. And there's other kinds of giving too. It doesn't have to be necessarily that you're giving to a missionary of this church. There's a lot of other ways you can do that. And I don't also want to clarify on baby step seven, you don't have to be on baby step seven in order to give, right? I mean, we talked about tithing this whole time, but if God's like really like putting on your heart to give towards a particular missionary, you don't have to wait till your house is paid off in order to do that. You don't have to wait until, you know, you hit some magical number or point before you can start, doing those things. So obviously do what the Holy Spirit is leading you to do. But, when you get to a point where, you know, we talked about like the average house payment we talked about a couple weeks ago was around, $1,200, I think, or between $1,000 and $1,200 in Cass County. If that money was freed up every single month, think about, you know, how much more you could do, with that money, if you didn't have to send it to, you know, Bank of America or whatever bank you use, like if you didn't have to send that money to them, think about the ways that you could do or the things that you could do with that. And, so obviously we want things that, will make an impact. And so, not having the debt allows us to do that. So, there's some couple of stories I want to share, about being able to give. So I tell you guys, I listen to the Ramsey podcast fairly regularly. I don't listen to it every day, but I do listen to it fairly regularly. And I was listening to it last week and this lady called in. She was like late 40s, early 50s. And, she was on baby step seven and she had, I don't remember, like $75,000 saved up in her savings account. And she was calling in because she wanted to talk to Dave about like, I want to buy a car for my mom. I want to give my mom a car. And, you know, so she's like, I just want kind of, not permission, but she's like, kind of wanted to like get Dave's advice on, you know, is it okay for me to do this? And like, what things should I be thinking about, in order to make this large, purchase? And so he kind of walked through, you know, okay, what do you have here? What do you have here? And is your house paid off? You know, he's kind of walks through all these different things and he's like, do you have the cash for it? She's like, yeah, I got the money. And he's like, well, how much are you thinking about spending? She's like, well, I want to spend like 25 grand, on a car and give it to my mom. And he's like, you know, after going through all, he's like, yeah, why would you not do it? You have the money, you know, you're set yourself up. It's not going to like financially hinder you. And I was just thinking like, that would be awesome to be able to just give somebody, I mean, especially your mom, but to be able to like buy somebody a $25,000 car and just hand them the keys and just walk away from it, you know, and just say, you know, this is yours now. And, about what a blessing that could be to somebody. And Dave's always talking about on his show, like, you know, find a single mom and put a new set of tires on her car or, you know, fill up their gas tank or like whatever stage you're at, it doesn't have to be a $25,000 car. It could be, you know, smaller things wherever we are, in our financial journey. But just the idea of thinking outside the box of ways that like we could be a blessing to somebody else. And again, it money is money. And I mean, you know, it's all going to burn at the end of the day, but, think about some times that you have been stressed with money and how, like great it would have been if someone was just like, you really look like you could use like $500. Let me just, you know, let me buy your groceries for this month or buy your cart of groceries that you have right now. Or, we all hear stories about that, especially around the holidays. There's, you know, someone standing in line and they're paying for the groceries of the person behind them and stuff like that. It gets me excited to do those kinds of things and to think about what it would be like to have the money where you could do those kinds of things, be that kind of a blessing to somebody. There was another story, I couldn't find it, but it was way back when we took Financial Peace, like 15 years ago, back when it was on the CDs. I think they interviewed this couple. I don't remember exactly. I think it was an interview that, so as part of the Ramsey curriculum, they interviewed this couple and, they were going through baby step two and I don't remember exactly how much debt they had. I think it was around $15,000, something like that. And, they were really plugging away trying to get this paid off, but they really wanted to adopt a child but they kind of committed to it and they said, we're not going to adopt a child until we're debt free. We want to bring this child in after we're debt free so that this child doesn't ever know what it's like to have debt, and we want to raise them in like a debt-free household. But you know, we really want to do that, but we want to wait until we're done. And I don't remember exactly how long it was going to take them to finish, but they were going through it in a church, and somebody else in their church that they didn't really know had come up to them and asked if they could have them over for dinner or something like that. And the wife was like, I thought it was like a multi-level marketing thing. They wanted to like invite us over and like try to get us to start selling something or, you know, somehow, you know, so they kind of put it off for a while and they didn't go over. And then eventually, you know, after I think they, you know, kind of asked them again, like, hey, are we still going to get together? And so finally they said, okay, we'll come over for dinner or whatever it was. And so when they were over, they started talking about, you know, their finances, and they shared with them, you know, they were going through this debt-free journey and that they wanted to adopt. And of course, this other couple knew that already. They'd heard it from somebody. And they said, well, that's why we wanted to have you over. We want to pay off the rest of your debt so that you can go ahead and adopt the child that you want to adopt. And of course, there's just tears flowing and stuff in the interview. But those kinds of stories get you like a little bit emotional thinking about like what you could do, to bless somebody else and to like, you know, give them something that, that they can't get themselves. And so, any kind of story where people are giving just generous, outrageous, generous gifts of some kind like that is just, it's a really cool thing to think about and to kind of consider, what would we do if we had the ability to do those kinds of things? You know, would we be looking for opportunities to give? Would we be, looking for opportunities to bless somebody else with a gift like that? You know, are we doing those kinds of things where we are now? Are we looking for smaller versions of that? We used to have a guy when I worked at Commerce Bank, he would come in at Christmas time and he'd have all these $10 Subway gift cards and he'd just give $10 Subway. He'd go buy like 100 of them or whatever. And he'd just give them to all the places that he frequented. He was a insurance guy up in Raymore. And so partially I think it was just, you know, he's an insurance guy. Hey, if you ever need anything, come see me. Here's a gift card, you know, go buy yourself lunch or whatever. But you think about, I mean, he did that, I think every year. And he did it, you know, quite a few times. You buy $110 gift cards, that's $1,000. But it was just kind of like a little thing that he did, that he was able to kind of, you know, bless somebody. I've seen people do with Starbucks gift cards or $5 bills or whatever. You know, there's variations of that all throughout where, you know, no matter where we are in our finances, we, you know, all of us can kind of find some way that we can give back in some way. But, when you get to the end here, we're like, you know, like what's the goal of Baby Step 7? Build wealth and give. Okay, well, how much wealth do I build? How much do I give? Like whatever you want. Like, you know, it's kind of a choose your own adventure. You can give away as much as you want. You can save as much as you want. You can spend as much as you want on, you know, on things that, you know, experiences or, like I said, traveling for me, things like that. And so there's just a lot of cool things that you can do when you get to Baby Step 7. I should have probably advanced that sooner. Why? You should do it. I already said that. Okay. Changing your family tree. So this, if you listen to the Ramsey show at all, he talks about this a lot, changing your family tree. And so people come in, and if you guys don't know anything about the show, people come in usually like once per episode or once per hour, or maybe it's once a day. I don't know. They have a couple or a person comes in and they have what's called the debt-free stage, and the person gets up there and Dave kind of interviews them. How much, you know, how old are you? Where are you from? How much debt did you pay off? How long did it take you? How much do you make? What kind of job do you have? What was the hardest part? What was the easiest part? You know, you kind of ask these kinds of questions, and just for them to be able to share their story and share, you know, like what they went through, and with the idea being that would encourage others to kind of continue in their debt-free journey. But a lot of times, especially if they have kids with them, he'll mention, you know, that you're changing your family tree, and he talks about that because it's like, you know, the idea being, we're debt-free now, and now my kids don't have to deal with growing up in a household that's struggling with debt. And they know that as they get older, like, you can live a debt-free way. You can not have to be shackled by debt, you know, like, and so you're changing that family tree. You're adjusting the way or the ways that child looks at life and the way they look at finances. And if you have your Bible, open up to Proverbs chapter 13. Got a couple of verses I want to read. Sorry, that was kind of in the mic. All right, Proverbs 13, verse 22. I guess I have it on the screen. It says, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. And so this idea of changing your family tree is a biblical principle. You know, we all want to see our children do better than we did, to have better than we had. That's kind of an ingrained thing inside of us. And this verse kind of alludes to that a good man leaves inheritance to his children's children. And that's certainly true of physical wealth. Like, it is good if you have, you know, when you die, if there's money to be left to your children, and, you know, if you have enough wealth, they can then be good stewards of it, and you've taught them the principles that they should live by that they then can leave it to their children and their children. And that's how you get these generational wealth, like a lot of these families, the Rockefellers and the Kennedys and these people who have, they ingrain it into their children as they grow. Here's the wise things to do with your money. Here's how to handle your money in a way that maybe not for them, those families specifically, but we want to train our children up to use this to honor and glorify the Lord. It's not ours. Be a good steward of this. And I've tried to be a good steward, and here's what I'm leaving you. So this is certainly true of physical wealth. It is good to leave an inheritance to our children and to their children, but you don't have to leave financial wealth to your children or their children in order to be a good person, right? I mean, this can be said of character traits, right? I mean, to have your children know, how to work hard, how to have integrity, how to be trustworthy, how to be a godly man or a godly woman. Those are all like things that you can leave as an inheritance as well. It's not just about the finances, but we know that like if you are a parent, you know that your kids watch you, right? I mean, I catch my kids doing stuff all the time and I'm like, stop doing that. And then I remember usually a lot of times God just is like, hey, you do the same thing, in the adult version of whatever the thing is. And our kids watch us. They learn from us. They get the things that we do. They pick up on those things. Even when we don't want them to. And so knowing that the things that we're leaving behind with them, the things that we are teaching them, whether we're actively saying it to them or not, the things that we're investing in them that is the inheritance that we're leaving to them. So, if they grow up in a household that, uses debt and constantly struggles with it and, it's hard to make ends meet and they're paycheck to paycheck and everything's always tight and we can't have what we want. And things just don't seem to work out, they're either going to grow up one of two ways. They're going to grow up and they're going to hate debt so much because they saw how it affected and how it impacted their parents, and they don't want that for their kids, and so they're going to do everything they can to avoid that. Or they're going to just think, this is normal, this is how life is, yes, it's tough, we're just going to borrow until we can't borrow anymore, we're going to struggle to make the payments because that's how mom and dad did it. So it's going to take kind of one of those two routes. And that's true of a lot of things. If you have like a family that's, really outdoorsy, those kids grow up being outdoorsy, and oftentimes they get older and they are outdoorsy people and they take their kids out and they go out and do stuff outside. And, it's that way with a lot of different things, but creating generational change or changing your family tree is, as Dave says it, just comes back to being a good steward of the things that we have, whether it's finances, whether it's anything else. It doesn't have to just be financial, but creating those character traits and those lifestyle changes are really important to being able to leave an inheritance to our children's children. And if you turn, actually you don't have to turn there, I think I have it on the board, yeah. Proverbs 22:6, we all know this verse, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And so, the things that we train our children, again, with our words or with our actions, with the things that we do, those are the things that they are going to grow up understanding. Those are the things that they're going to grow up in. And so I didn't purposely wear my Super Bowl hoodie today, but I really like the Chiefs. I'm a sports fan, but mostly a football fan. Definitely a Chiefs fan. I remember going to games as a kid. I remember going, there was this player, Tamarick Vanover. Any of you guys remember him? He was a punt returner for the Chiefs, like back in the 90s. And, I don't know why. He was signing autographs at the Burger King in Raymore, when I was a kid. I guess it's Belton. When I was a kid, I remember going up there, standing in line, getting an autograph from him. I remember getting, signed, football cards of different players and stuff. And I still have a lot of those things. So, I mean, I grew up being a Chiefs fan. I've been a Chiefs fan my whole life. I have tried to train my kids to be Chiefs fans as well. They're not fans of another team necessarily, but they don't necessarily like to sit down and watch the games with me all the time. But I found this picture of us. So this was the day after Lincoln was born. So this is in the hospital bed. And he's wearing a football onesie with a Chiefs hat. I got, all of us are wearing Chiefs gear. We watched the Chiefs game, from the hospital bed because the Chiefs were playing on Sunday and Lincoln was born on a Saturday. And so we didn't want to miss the Chiefs game. So literally from the day after Lincoln was born. and we did it with Jackson too. We've been watching the Chiefs. Like that is something that is part of our lives. And so hopefully as my kids grow up, they will continue to be Chiefs fans. You know, I hope, pray to the Lord, they don't become Broncos fans or Raiders fans or Chargers fans. But, you know, whether they move, like I moved to Phoenix. I lived there for 6 years. I was a Chiefs fan still in Phoenix. Like, you know, those kinds of things become ingrained in us and we just kind of, they stick with us. And so, you know, it could be sports. You know, the inheritance that I'm leaving them, you know, aside from the financial aspect of it, is Chiefs fandom, right? That's something I want to leave with my kids. I want them to be Chiefs fans as well. Now, they have Mahomes, which I didn't have growing up. For all of us who are older than, you know, like 15, you didn't grow up with the Chiefs having an awesome quarterback. Usually it was somebody not so good. But they're still good memories, right? All of us probably have good memories of the Chiefs over the years. And so sports, that's one of the things. But it can really be lots of different things in your life that that you want to leave as an inheritance to your children. And so I hope regarding finances that I'm the last person in my branch of the family tree that borrows money, right? I hope that that's the case. And I don't like sit down with my kids and go over a spreadsheet all the time and teach them about, you know, Roth 401ks and stuff. I'm not doing that with them. But, you know, we do talk semi-openly about finances and we do. I've told you guys, you know, I go over their college savings statement with them once a year maybe and just show them how it's doing. We look up the cost of tuition at certain schools and is this going to be enough to pay for this? And, you know, how is this going to work for you? And those kinds of things. And they know, you know, like if we don't have the money for something, we just can't buy it right then. You know, the concept of they get a little bit of money for doing chores around the house and, okay, you got to save some of that. You got to give some of that. You can spend some of it on this thing if you want to. You know, they get a little bit of autonomy with that. So, but just like some of those principles that we try and work into, not that we're like regimenting every aspect of their life, but we want to try to get them to where they understand how money works. So when they leave my house that, you know, they're not just like falling into all these financial traps. They're not, you know, they're competent when it comes to how to handle their money. How to be wise, how to be a good steward. Like those are things that we talk about and how the money doesn't belong to us. And so we're not just going to frivolously spend it away. Those kinds of things. And so that's a legacy. Even if, you know, we didn't have money to leave them, we can leave them, you know, the knowledge of how to handle the finances. And so all of us, you know, probably have different things that we learned from our parents, good and bad, that is an inheritance that we get from them. Some of us may get financial inheritance from our parents. Some of us may not get that. But all of us kind of have things that our parents invested in us, the things that we think are important that we've invested into our children. And so the goal is to change that financial tree, or family tree, not financial tree, change that family tree into the things that we want to leave with them. And so we talk about it a lot at this church with discipleship. Right, we you know, 2 Timothy 2:2, we want to invest the word of God in people who are faithful and that can teach others also. That's the whole philosophy that Jesus Christ left us with on how to share the gospel, how to, you know, propagate the gospel throughout all the world. It's the same kind of thing with our kids, with serving the Lord, right? My kids come with me to a lot of serving the Lord type things. You know, we went to someone's house, they got their wheelchair stuck. It slipped off the driveway and it was stuck in the grass and they couldn't get it out. And so I went home, got my kids. I'm like, we're going to help this lady get her wheelchair out of the grass, you know, get it back in her house. Or if we're going to go help somebody move, you know, if like Jackson would come with me at this point, he's old enough and able to help and not be in the way. And like, he can help do those things. So we're teaching them how to, serve the Lord, right? We talk about, you know, reading our Bible, we pray. Those kinds of things are important when you're leaving an inheritance to your children and to their children. When it comes to serving the Lord, we want to invest into them so that they can faithfully invest that into somebody else. And so all of that kind of goes back to that idea of changing your family tree. And when we talk about it financially, at least, it can be with actual finances or it can just be with the knowledge of how to handle those finances and how to be a good steward. So I advanced my slide one too early. The last kind of section I want to wrap up, we talked about a couple different things throughout the last 4 weeks that I've said, oh, I'll talk more about that at the end, or I'll mention this again, or whatever. I didn't have time to get into it at that time, or it didn't fit in right. So there's a couple just odds and ends things that I want to bring up. The first one's life insurance. So we briefly talked about it. I think it was the first week I brought it up, but I didn't really spend much time on it because I wanted to circle back and actually spend some time talking about it. So the purpose of life insurance is to replace your income. So if somebody depends on your income, then you should have life insurance. If you don't have anybody depending on your income, if it's just you, you probably don't need life insurance. There's obviously variables in there, but it's recommended to have 10 to 12 times your income for you. So if you make $50,000 a year, you should have $500,000 to $600,000 in coverage. With the idea being, like we talked about last week, if you were to invest, you know, so like let's say I died and I had 10 times my income on me, which I do, Brenda's going to get a check for 10 years of my salary at one time. And the idea would be that she would put that into a mutual fund or some type of investment that would earn her roughly 10%, which we talked about was the annual rate of return for the stock market over the last 70 or 80 years. So if she could earn 10% per year on that money, then she could pull that 10% a year off, which is how much I made, right? If she got 10 times, if we got 10 times what I make, she could get my salary every year off of that investment. Now we also talked about how the stock market doesn't ever, almost never, earns 10% in a given year. Sometimes it's 4, sometimes it loses, sometimes it's 25. But on average, that's the point of it. That's the idea behind it. The philosophy behind it is to replace my income, she could earn that much in interest off of the chunk of money that she receives. And so that's kind of the philosophy behind that. But if you're single and you don't have any kids, you might not need life insurance. If you're married and you have no children and both of you are working and, you know, you're renting an apartment or something like that, you may not need life insurance. If your kids are grown and out of the house and they're not, there's no one depending on your income coming in each month, you may not need life insurance. There's certain things that certain people that are not going to need life insurance at a given moment in their life. If you're retired and you're not earning an income of your own anyways, then you probably don't need life insurance. But there's a couple different types of life insurance I want to talk about also. A lot of you guys have probably heard the term whole life and term life. Those are kind of the two main ones. There's some other ones, universal life and variable life. We're not going to talk about those tonight, but if you want to learn more about it, you can, you know, certainly do your own research. But there's a couple of different ways to distinguish between whole life and term life. So whole life, it generally lasts your whole life. That's why they call it whole life. You get it at whatever age. Like my parents got me a whole life policy when I was a baby, and when I got married, I cashed it in, and it paid for part of our honeymoon. So like I didn't have a need for that insurance anymore, and I needed the cash value more. So, but if you keep it, it can last generally your whole life. Some of them end at like age 90 or 95. So, you know, technically may not last your whole life, but in general, they last your whole life. Most of them build cash value. So they take a percentage of your premiums. They put that into an account within the policy, and it grows at a set interest rate. Or sometimes it's a variable interest rate, but some of the money that you pay in goes into like a savings account within the policy. You can then borrow against that policy if you want to, or you could withdraw it, some of it or all of it, to use for whatever you would need it for. And the premium on that, so you have a monthly or a, you know, an annual premium that you pay, and that generally remains consistent throughout the policy. So like with the one that my parents got when I was a baby, they paid into it for, I don't know, like 15 years or something, 18 years, whatever it was. And then at that point, the insurance agent told them, hey, there's enough money being generated monthly to cover the policy. So like they didn't have to keep paying the premium, but the premium amount stayed the same. And they were basically just taking it from the cash value account to pay the premium. So my parents didn't have to keep paying for it, but the policy would stay in effect. It's kind of how they did that. So that's whole life. Then there's term life. And so, it doesn't last for your whole life. It lasts for a term. You specify that at the beginning, usually 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, something like that. I think 30 years is about the max you can buy on a term policy. It does not build cash value. So there's no cash value within the policy. Your premium does stay level. Generally speaking, you set the term. You say, okay, I want this for 20 years for this amount of money. And they tell you, okay, it's going to cost this much. And that's what your monthly premium is. And so that stays the same over the course of that 10, 20, 30 year time period, whatever it may be. So if you just knew that information, just the information I've given you so far, the whole life policy sounds much better because you get the cash value and the term one doesn't have that. And the term one ends at a certain period of time and you don't get to keep it after that. But I want to show you guys a couple of slides. Hopefully you can read that. Can everybody read that okay? I made it as big as would fit on the slide, so hopefully you can see it. There's a lot going on in that chart, but let me just break it down quickly for you. So this is for women, average annual life insurance rates for women. I have another slide that's for men. They're very similar. The women is actually a little cheaper, but not significantly. So at the top there, you see if you're 30 years old when you buy it, and then there's some policy amounts, $250,000, $500,000, and $1 million. And then there's a 20-year column, a 30-year column, and a whole life column. So, for example, if you're 30 years old, let's use 40. I'm 40 almost. If you're 40 years old and I wanted to buy a 20-year policy that would end when I was 60 years old, and I wanted to buy it for $500,000, that would cost me roughly $283 per year. I think the men's one is, $335 per year for me. I'm a man. So, that's about $30 a month, between $25 and $30 per month. And anytime in the next 20 years, if I was to die, Brenda would get a check for $500,000 in this scenario. If I want to do a 30-year one, maybe I wanted it to go a little bit longer. It's $584 per year, or I guess that'd be about, about $50 a month, give or take. Look at the last column, though. The whole life policy for the same thing, $7,028 per year, which is, about $120 a month, give or take. I guess it'd be a little less than $115 a month. And I did the math on, not on every single line on this whole chart, but on average, it's going to be anywhere from like 8 to 12 times more expensive for whole life than it is for term life. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But one of the main benefits, like I said, of the whole life policy is that it builds up cash value. So for that, and that $7,000 example, I'm giving them $7,000 a year. And eventually, when I die, they're going to give my wife $500,000, right? That's the reason I'm paying that $7,000 monthly or annual fee. And a percentage of that, they're going to put into a savings account for me. I don't know what the percentages is in this particular one, but they're going to put some of that away for me in a savings account that I can then either borrow against or take a cash withdrawal from, which is nice. But when it's 10 times more expensive than the term policy, the returns on that, the cash value better build up really fast. But the downside of it is that they usually don't tell you. And I even tried looking it up, and a lot of companies are really vague about the way they word things. But when you die with the whole life policy, maybe you've got, some of these policies, if you've had them for years and years, they may have $40,000 or $50,000 in cash value built up in them. When you die, the insurance company keeps the cash value. They only actually pay out the face value of the policy. And so unless you withdraw that while you're alive and use it for something or borrow against it, you lose the cash value aspect of that policy when you die. They pay out the face value just like they would if you had the term policy. Now, obviously, there is downside for the term. You could pay into this for 30 years at $584 per year. And hopefully, fingers crossed, I live past the age of 70, and now I've paid in for 30 years and I get nothing, right? At age 70, I just lose the coverage, it goes away, and I don't get any life insurance benefits, or my wife would not get any life insurance benefits if I lasted more than 30 years. So you're kind of gambling on the fact that, how long am I going to live? Am I going to die in the time period that I have this policy if you do a term policy? But the idea behind doing term versus whole life is at some point, hopefully, you become self-insured, meaning at some point my kids are going to be out of the house. At some point, if I'm working the plan, I'm being intentional, and I'm paying extra on my mortgage is going to be paid off at some point. So if I don't have any kids in the house, I don't have a mortgage, we've been investing 15% of my income, we've saved for my kids' college. Fast forward, 20 years from now, I'm 60, and I die, and I'm still working. That's going to be obviously a, hopefully an emotional loss for Brenda. But financially, hopefully by that point, she's okay, right? The house is paid for. The kids are gone. You know, maybe she's still working at that time. But she's got, you know, other assets to be able to use. She doesn't need a $500,000 policy on me at that time, right? So the idea is eventually we're going to get to the point where we don't need the policy anymore. So the reason for the term is it's to cover you during those time periods where the kids are little, you don't have your house paid for, you need that other person's income, like it's vital for you to survive. That's when you would want the term policy to be in effect. So, you know, if you're a young couple that has a baby and, you have life insurance, you want it at least for the length of time that that baby is like in your house. You know, if you did a 20-year policy and by 20 years old, you think, okay, the kid's going to be out of the house. And hopefully by that point, our house is paid off. If we did a 15-year mortgage, and hopefully we've been funding our kids' college, we've been funding our retirement for the last 20 years. At the end of 20 years, if one of the people dies, the other person's probably going to be okay without that insurance. Or maybe you think, well, we're going to have more kids, so let's do 30 years just so we make sure we get all the kids out of the house before the term policy expires. But at some point, you know, like if you're working towards this goal of being out of debt and having, building up a retirement fund and building up some savings and all those things, at some point you don't need the policy anymore. And so, you know, if I die and we've got $1 million in our retirement accounts and our house is paid off, like Brenda's going to be financially, she's going to be okay. And so all that life insurance does is, you know, they have all these actuarial tables that they use and they have all the data of how old is the average person when they die and what if they're a smoker and what if they have a history of cancer in their family? What if they have a history of mental health issues? What if they have this, and they ask you all these questions when you sign up for life insurance to see how long they think you're going to live. And then they're going to base your rate, your annual premium, on what the odds are that you're going to die during that period of time, which is kind of a morbid like thing to think about or talk about, is like, what if I die in the next 20 years, or what if I die in the next 30 years, or how long do I think I'm going to live? You know, like those are kind of difficult questions to think about, but that's what the insurance companies are doing. They're running all these figures and they're thinking, okay, we got to have enough to pay this policy. You know, out of 1,000 people, 1,000 30-year-old people, how many of those people are going to die in the next 20 years? Okay, well, 200 of them on average are going to die. Well, we need to have enough coming in that we can cover the deaths of those 200, or whatever the numbers are. But that's how they work with these policies. And so, obviously, all of us have 100% chance of death at some point, unless Jesus comes back before we die, which, fingers crossed, that's going to happen, right? But otherwise, all of us are going to die at some point. So it's all about the odds of how likely that is to happen during that time period. So it's the same thing with, like, we talked about a little bit with car insurance and how you could, you know, if you're wanting to save some money and you're wanting to take on a little bit of extra risk on yourself, you could increase your deductible, right? So you're taking on more risk. The insurance company is taking on less risk. And because of that, they're going to lower your premiums a little bit. Or if you say, okay, I don't even want coverage anymore, just give me liability only to cover the other person's car. I don't even want coverage on my car because it's not worth it, or I have an emergency fund, I can just pay for a new one, or whatever. That's going to be even more risk on me. All the risk on my own car is on me at that point. None is on the insurance company, so the rates even go lower than that. So you can play around with some of those things. It's the same thing with life insurance. Okay, what if I lost 50 pounds and then I went back in? Well, now your risk of dying is lower because you are healthier, and so, you know, we're going to lower the premium on your policy a little bit. Or what if I did it? I probably don't need 30. What if I did 25 years? Okay, we're going to lower it a little bit because you're less likely to die because there's 5 years less of this window that we're talking about. And so there's a lot of things you can do to kind of play around with those numbers. But the cost is, like I said, is very, very low on a term policy. So if somebody depends on your income, the younger you are, again, the less expensive it is, because the less likely you're going to die. You know, if you're 20, you buy a 30-year policy, it's less likely that you're going to die by 50 than it is for me to buy a 30-year policy, right? I mean, the older you get, the more likely it is that you're gonna die. So, so all those things kind of factor in. Okay, does anybody have any? Well, I'm gonna take questions at the end. Let me take questions at the end because I'll pass the microphone around. But remember it. Don't forget it. Okay. So the last will and testament. This is one other thing we didn't really talk about much. I think when I did this in Life Issues, Belinda, I think you brought it up and asked something about a will, and I hadn't talked about that in that that series, and so I want to make sure I covered it a little bit in this series. So if you're over 18 years old and you own anything, you should have a will. You know, it doesn't matter if you have kids. It doesn't matter if you have a bunch of money or a little bit of money. If you own a car or you have a bank account, like having a will is important. At the very least, putting beneficiaries on things, which we talked about last week with Candace and Aaron. They were talking about their dad and his house and having a beneficiary listed on bank accounts, car titles, your home, you know, big asset. What about your retirement accounts? We've been working on, you know, saving up money in our retirement. Well, what happens when you die if you don't get to use it and there's money left in there? Who's the beneficiary on there? Hopefully it's not like an ex-wife or an ex-husband or something like that. Or, you know, I didn't have any kids when I opened it, and now my wife's gone and I didn't put my kids' names on it. So now where does it go? And it can get really complicated if you don't plan for like these after you're gone situations, planning for life insurance. Life insurance doesn't help me at all other than it gives me some peace knowing that when I'm gone, my wife and my kids will be taken care of, right, if something was to happen to me. But life insurance doesn't help me personally. My life insurance doesn't. Brenda's life insurance would help me, obviously, in the event that she passes first. But planning for, like, these afterlife type of situations, planning your last will and testament gives peace to you knowing that it's taken care of and that your family isn't going to have to fight over your stuff when you're gone. Because all of us probably have heard stories, or maybe it's your own family, where people, you know, grandpa dies and he's got kids and one kid's been disowned, but that grandpa never changed the will. So now this kid that was at odds with grandpa now is entitled to half of his money, and the other family doesn't think that's right, but grandpa didn't have a will. So no one knows, and it has to go by, you know, the legal process, and things can get really messy, right? Or, there's so many bad stories out there of people who didn't have a will and the family gets in fights, and it's like generational. It's changing your family tree the wrong way, where your family is fighting for years and years or disowns portions of your family because you're fighting over who gets, you know, grandpa's lake house, who gets grandpa's retirement account or whatever. That's not where you want to find yourself. And certainly you don't want that for your kids and your grandkids. So like have a will, have it written down. Like this is who gets what. Ideally, have those conversations with those people while you're still alive. You know, sit down with, you know, if I've got two kids and my kids are adults, me and Brenda sit down with them and say, with both of them and their spouses if they're married, and say, listen, you are not doing what we think you should be doing, and we're afraid if we give you all this money, you're going to do something stupid with it. So we're going to give it to your brother, but half of it's going to go in a trust for you, and if you get your life right, and you meet these certain criteria, then you can have the money or whatever. Like, or maybe they're both great and we love them and their spouses are great, and we tell them, hey, both of you guys are getting half of everything. You know, we want you to feel free to sell our house if you want to. Feel free to keep it if you want to. Don't feel like you have to keep it because it was ours. Like, don't hang on to it for our benefit. Like, have those kinds of conversations with kids as you make those decisions, so that everyone can either be upset with you while you're alive, or they can be happy with what you're doing. They, you know, all the kids know this is what Dad wants. I don't really care if you like it. This is what Dad says. It's his money. He gets to do what he wants with it. So having a will, at least have it written down. But ideally having those conversations on the front end with your family, so that no one's like bummed out or mad at the other one because they didn't get what they think they were entitled to in the end. And so let me see. That's actually the next thing. There's all kinds of places you can do it. You can get them for fairly cheap. Mama Bear Legal Forms. Some of you guys might have heard of Mama Bear Legal Forms. It's just a website you can use. You pick your state because you want to make sure it's for the specific state that you live in, because different states have different rules. So you can pick whatever state you're in. I looked up their website today. It's like $200 to have a will done for you and a spouse. So it's not that expensive. If you have kids, like when me and Brenda, for our 10-year anniversary, we went to Mexico. And before we left, we had to get something in place. Like, what if we both die while we're gone? The kids were staying with my parents, and my parents and her mom back and forth. Well, who gets our kids? Like, where do we want the kids to go? And so that's an important conversation to have with the people who are getting your kids and with the rest of your family, knowing like, yeah, so they're not surprised by that. And, you know, like in our case, I think the way ours was worded is that we would give them to my sister because at the time they lived here. But now it would not make sense for my kids to go to Germany to live with my sister and her husband, as it would to go like with my parents or Brenda's mom. So, you know, like some of those things are going to change over time, but make sure everybody in the family knows, hey, our kids are going to be going to so-and-so and our life insurance money is also going to so-and-so, in so that they can take care of the kids. So if you have a problem with that, talk to me about it. Don't talk to them about it. You know, that kind of a thing. Cause you know, maybe other grandma wanted the kids and now now the grandmas are fighting over who got the kids, or maybe the grandma didn't want the kids and thank goodness you got them and not me or whatever. So having a will, having it written down, having a plan, it's really not that expensive. To me, it's kind of like filing taxes. I told you guys early on at this that I hate filing taxes. It's no fun. You know, like writing up a will is not really fun. Talking about what's going to happen when I die, who's going to get my stuff. Like that's not really a concept that all of us like to think about. But Dave will talk about it on his show. He'll say, making a will does not make you any more likely to die, right? Like talking about it and having a plan for it doesn't make it more likely to happen. Although sometimes we think about it like, oh, I don't want to write it all down. I'm superstitious. And if I do that, then it might mean I actually die. Well, at some point, all of us are going to do that. Again, unless Jesus comes back, we're all going to die. So we should have a plan written down. You know, verbal agreements, the court doesn't really recognize those things. They have to go by what the law says. And so having those things written down is really important. So those are kind of the last two things I want to talk about. We got 15 minutes, which is about how much time I was hoping we'd have for questions. So, I'll let you do it.
Hello.
There we go.
Which insurance does Dave Ramsey recommend?
For life insurance?
Correct.
Term. He recommends doing either, depending on where you're at, 10, 15, 20 year, something like that. Term.
Does that payment, like say if you started at 25 years old, does that payment stay the same the entire
time? For the
term?
Life of whatever the term is, yeah. So I got mine in play. I've had a couple different policies. I got a policy when I was in my 20s. Policy I have now, I got maybe 5 years ago, something like that. It's a 20-year policy, so I got it 5 years ago. But so yeah, it's the same for the whole 20 years. So yeah, the younger and healthier you are when you lock it in, the better it's going to be because the rate will stay the same the whole time. But now, like, if I wanted to go back, like let's say, so I told you guys I'm not in the greatest shape. So if I was to lose some weight and get a little healthier, I could probably redo it now, even though I'm 5 or 6 years older, and maybe the premium would even come down a little bit. Because life expectancies are extended and, you know, so those tables are constantly changing. So you can, like, if you did a 20-year policy as a 20-year-old and then, you know, 10 years later you're like, I want to extend it more, you could do another policy to kind of overlap that. So
it's more financial beneficial if you're trying to pay off debt at the same time and have,
right,
you know, have insurance to cover in case something happens to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things some people, like, think, oh, I'll wait till I get out of debt to get life insurance in place. It's like the
right
time that you need it the most is when you don't have the debt paid off. Like, do it now. It's not that expensive. I mean, those tables, again, they do vary, but I mean, what was it, 20? For $500,000 for me as a 40-year-old, $600, I mean, that's 500 for $50 a month. That's really not that expensive in the scope of, you know,
$12.50 a week, right?
Yeah, it's so minimal for what you, I mean, for my wife to get $500,000 when I die, I'll pay $50 a month for that. So
another option for your kids' education is you can, if they want to, join the military and mm-hmm. You can get very cheap life insurance through them.
Yep.
You can get health insurance through them and get an education paid for just by joining the Air Force Reserves or
right.
the Army Reserves or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Navy.
Military guys over here fighting over who's joining what. Yeah, they all pay for it, right? It doesn't matter which one you join.
Then you don't have to save up for it.
Yes, yeah, you don't have to save up for it. And I mean, honestly, their kids can use it. You know, like through the GI Bill, I don't know exactly how all of it works, but like my brother-in-law has not used his college. I mean, he's been educated in the military and gotten different certifications, but he didn't actually go to college. And so his girls now, I think they split the GI Bill 50-50, so each of them can get half of it paid for. So they're able to take care of their kids' college without having to save for it because he is in the military. So, yeah, there definitely is a benefit there.
For a part-time job.
Yeah, Yeah, he's in it full time, but yes, you can. Yeah, even reserves, I think you still get the same benefit as far as that goes. I don't know how the health insurance side of things work, but
yes, you can get TRICARE reserves through them too.
You can what?
You get TRICARE, which is their health insurance.
And as a reservist, you can get that too.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the max life insurance you can get is $400,000, and it even pays it during wartime. So
nice. Okay.
So, and of course, it needs to based on your what right. you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, your risk of death goes up a little bit during those times, for sure.
Okay, it's the Navy's turn.
Okay. Did you have a question, Rex? Oh, Di has a question. All right, pass it up to Di. You got to be on the mic, Di. I'm sorry. You want to make Rex whisper it to Rex, and he can ask it for you.
So where do you find the life insurance that stays the same? Everything that we see in the mail or whatever, you're 60 years old and it's this much. You go up to 63 or 65 and it goes up.
Is that for life insurance?
Yeah.
But you don't really need it, life insurance, when you get to that age, because it's way more expensive if you look down.
Yeah, yeah, it can get really costly. I mean, like the 30-year term for a 60-year-old is not even available because the odds of someone living to 90 is not that great, you know.
Okay, and then, you know, you make your will and stuff and you have all of these, like, investments or whatever. Well, you've used some of that money, and so it's dropped. Do you have to change your will?
No.
Or is it
no, so
just
the will,
whatever they get?
Yeah, so the will would be more generic, like, you know, all of my home I leave to so-and-so. My, you know, most of the accounts you're going to name, like on your 401k, I think they make you name a beneficiary on your 401k, and your spouse is the default 401k beneficiary if you don't name one. But if you don't have a spouse, then it could get tricky. Who gets it then? Does it go to your parents? Does it go to your, you know, like who, your friends? Like who gets the money? You can leave it to whoever you want, but you need to designate that. So on the will, yeah, you don't have to name, you know, I want $50,000 to go to this person. It's what I want the account to be divided evenly between these people, or I want, you know, 20% to this person, 50 to the, or however you divide it up. You can get really specific on some of those things, or you can just leave it generic. Like, I want everything to go to split evenly between my kids. You know, that would be a pretty generic, like, that's a fairly normal will. You know, I want to divide it evenly between my children. But again, if you have, like, let's say one of your spouse dies, you get remarried. Now, do you want some of your money to go to their kids that aren't yours? Or, you know, how old were they when you came into their life? You know, did you raise them? Did you not? Are they already adults before you got married? You know, you got to decide all that, because if you don't write anything down and it gets split evenly, or let's say, you know, you pass away and your spouse has other kids. Well, your spouse gets all of your money now, if you didn't name anybody. And now her beneficiaries are her children, you know, and so then so that's not even your own kid. Your kids may get left out if you don't designate it the right way. So, however you, like, the last will is, like, it's my will be done, you know? And so, like, you get to decide however you want it to be done, but if you don't decide anything, then the law takes an effect, and it may not go where you wanted it to go in the first place, so.
So you mentioned making sure you have beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I've heard that if you have beneficiaries on everything, you don't need a will.
You
have less of a need of it, I guess, because you still have the beneficiaries in place. But what happens to the things in your house? You know, who gets your family jewelry? You can't put a beneficiary on some of those things. So that's still important to have. And, you know, maybe you forget. So, like, my parents had a will when I was, I don't know, 4 years old or something. They set up a will, and they said that they wanted all their assets split evenly between Luke Fleshman and future sibling, or any future siblings, or something like that. And so it was that way till I was like, I think I was an adult. I mean, my sister was like 4 years younger than me, but my parents just never went back and updated it. So I think it would have been fine. You know, it's me and any other siblings. But like once I was an adult, my parents were like, oh, we need to get our will updated because my sister is now 20 years old and she's not even named in the will by name, you know. And so they went back and they redid it and they had the will updated to where it includes everything. So yeah, it just covers everything that you have that you may want to go to somebody. Beneficiaries help a lot, though, like with cars, houses, bank accounts, retirement accounts, anything where there's money involved or an asset involved. Right. Yes, it helps them avoid going to probate and having to deal with all of that. Yeah. Do you have a question? A new will? It depends on how the will's worded, but she said if your spouse passes away, do you have to have a will done? I would redo it. at that point, because the bank accounts and the things that were joint accounts are now sole accounts, and you may want to divvy it up slightly differently then, or, you know, maybe your life situation has changed, and, you know, maybe other variables have happened, and so it's just good to review it and double check on it. So, Belinda, do you have a question? Don't run this to her. Hold on, I didn't hear what you said.
What do you think of a quick claim title deed on your house once you paid off and just automatically transferred into your children's names before you die?
If you transfer the ownership of your house into your kids' names before you die, you could have some serious tax problems with that. Like, you'd be giving them a gift valued at whatever the house is valued at. So I would not quick claim deed it to them. You can put a beneficiary. You can name them as beneficiary on the house, so that when you die, that the house would be titled to them. But a quick claim deed is you are no longer claiming interest in ownership of that house. And so if you give that to them, that is now their gift. So if your house is worth $200,000, you've just gifted them a $200,000 gift, which you cannot do with the IRS without them paying gift taxes on it. And, you know, if it's an asset like a house, I don't know what gift tax rate is, but let's say it's 15%. Well, they might owe $30,000 in taxes on that, and maybe they don't have the money to do that because you still are living in the house. So there's some things you can do to, like, some estate planning attorneys that maybe could help, like, with a better suggestion than that. But if you gift your house to someone, even if it's paid off, it could result in some serious tax liability for them while you're still alive. Now, if you deed it to them as a beneficiary and you pass away, and they get it, generally there's not a tax implication on them for that. It depends on the state, but I don't think Missouri has any state taxes on that or gift taxes on that. yeah. He said your kids could kick you out if you give them the house. Yeah. Mom, we're going to sell the house now that you gave it to us. Thanks for that, by the way. Oh, Brian's got a question.
What I would say, if that's a concern as you get older, is to get a trust. A family trust. Yeah. So that's the better way of handling the tax liability.
Yeah. Yeah, and estate attorneys can help you get all that stuff set up as well. But once you get a trust, you still got to make sure you put the house in the trust. Otherwise, it doesn't help you with that. So there's all kinds of things. But, yeah, that would be someone you'd want to have someone, like, walk through it with you on how to do all that. Right, yeah. Yes, ma'am.
What do you think about long care insurance?
Long-term care insurance? Mm-hmm. If you can get it, Dave recommends at 60 years old to get it. That's when it becomes, it's still relatively inexpensive at that point because you're young enough and hopefully able-bodied enough that it's not super expensive. If you get it before that, he says the odds of going into a nursing home is like less than 1% before you turn 60, so you don't really need it before that. But if you can get it, yeah, it definitely is a good thing because usually it'll pay, I think a lot of them are like 3 or 4 years of a long-term care facility, which is anywhere from, I don't know, $50,000 a year or so. So it may be a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of coverage that keeps from having to tap into the nest egg. So, yeah, if you can get it at 60 years old I think it's fairly expensive for what it is. I mean, it may be $3,000 or $4,000 a year or more, depending on how. But that one's a lot dependent on the age of the person, their health situation, and stuff like that. So, obviously, if you're 75 years old, it's probably not. It may not be, maybe cost prohibitive to get it at that point. But, yeah, long-term care insurance is usually a good buy. Yeah, Brenda's grandma she had long-term care insurance that she bought decades ago. And it was back when, is that me or? Okay, I'll try and not touch it. But her grandma had long-term care insurance, like she bought 30 or 40 years ago or some long time ago. She just had her 90th birthday. She just passed, but she had her 90th birthday before she passed. But her long-term care insurance covered an indefinite stay in a long-term care facility. So she was in a long-term care facility for how many years was she in that? Multiple years, more than what it would normally cover now. Most of the policies now is like 3 years or 4 years, something like that. So. Oh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty good, I mean, when you look at the cost of it, it's like, ugh, do I really want to pay that? But if it keeps you from tapping into your nest egg and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on long-term care for 4 or 5 years in a nursing home, because usually a lot of times what happens is, like a husband and wife, you know, the husband goes in and he spends 3 or 4 years in there and they shell out $200,000 on coverage to stay in there, and then he dies, and then the wife is left, and now she doesn't have any money, and, you know, she doesn't have her husband or anything, and so it can be a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, it was more than, but, and again, they run the tables on it. What's the likelihood this person goes into a nursing home? What's the likelihood they're going to stay the full 3 or 4 years that we're going to cover them? You know, are they going to die before they go in? Are they never going to use, I mean, some people, my grandpa is 88, oh, he'll be 88 years old this month. And he's never been in a nursing home. And, you know, so, I mean, sometimes you may pay for it for years and years and years and never use it. Insurance is one of those things that you pay for hoping that you never have to use it. But you want it in case you do need to use it. So, all right, we're at 8 o'clock. It's 7:59 on my watch. So that's good timing. If anybody has any more questions, you can ask me afterwards, I guess. I won't be on tape, Di, if you ask me afterwards. Okay. All right. Let's pray and wrap up. Dear Lord God, thank you, for this evening, God. Thank you for this, opportunity to teach this series on finances. God, I just ask your blessing on all of our finances, God, as we do seek to be good stewards, wise stewards of your resources. And God, just help us to just be thinking of our finances in that way, God, that we're managing them for you, and God, that can guide and direct some of our decisions that we make. And God, help us to just make the right decisions when it comes to all these things we're talking about tonight with insurance. And God, there's just so many different options and so many different types of insurance. And God, some things we need, some things we don't. And so just help us to make wise decisions. God, the main thing, just help us to be intentional and think about what we're doing with the resources that you've given us. And God, I just thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk about these things and consider them in my own finances. And God, I just ask that you would bless us tonight as we head out, and God, help us to just live intentionally with the money. And God, just thank you for everything you do for us. In Jesus' name, amen.